Welcome back to this episode of Let's Talk Security Testing, the podcast where we talk all things security testing. Today, we are covering vulnerabilities and their detection methods. I feel like this doesn't get anywhere near enough attention, to be honest. I think, you know, we talk about it a lot. We're working on a piece of research. Like, scanners do not come with a label on the side that says, does not find business logic flaws. Right, these are the kind of things that I think people just need to be more aware of. Like, you know, we see people at OWASP talking about this stuff quite a lot, but fundamentally, there are detection methods for every single vulnerability, and we just don't consider this very often when we're putting together a security testing program, writing a security testing policy, buying a tool, buying a pen test. Like, maybe it does happen, and I just live in my own box, but I certainly don't see it happening. And haven't seen it happening in my 10 years or so in the industry.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Look, the even some of the leaders in this space, you know, MITRE, for example, massively well-respected organisation responsible for curating the largest list of weaknesses in the world, the CWE, have a section where they say, here are the detection methods for vulnerabilities. And at the bottom, in not particularly small print, is written the words, many CWE entries do not have a detection method listed. And the reasons for that is, you know, I guess, what do you reckon? That the vendors are not incentivized to disclose their shortcomings, or...
And I don't even necessarily think it's shortcomings, right? Because in some cases, there are some vulnerabilities that one DAST could find that the other DAST can't really find very well. You know, this isn't just about technology. This is about tool sets specifically. So there is a lot. There is a lot to unpack here in terms of what can and can't be found various different ways. But there has to be immense value in understanding what the detection methods are, because if you're doing any kind of threat modelling or you're concerned about anything in particular and you're not just ringing up a pen testing company saying, can I have a pen test, and then just seeing what the output is, you need to know what the detection method is to even know the thing that you're buying is even worth buying for your organisation.
Yeah, I mean, sure, you know, it is clearly valuable research. It is research that has been done, but the last time it was done, as far as I'm aware, was 2016. Department of Defense Department of Defense, United States, 2016, they did a massive research piece where they delved into the detection methods that currently exist for applications, specifically for applications being used by the military, but they released this publicly for anybody to use. And then they just stopped.
Yeah, and look at all the work that's gone into identifying malicious packages, malware upstream, looking at the various different things in SAST, DAST, pen testing, and then look at things like AI SAST now, right? There are tools that are attempting to start to look for things like logic flaws in code bases. Like, this is a moving picture, you know, that might change on certainly a monthly basis in terms of the capabilities that tools get. Because you've got things like weak ciphers, right? Tools can find them 100% of the time. You've got things like logic flaws, for the record, 0% of the time. And then you've got things like cross-site scripting, where for years tools have been able to find these through various methods, including things like fuzzing. But there's still immense value that humans can add over the top, identifying it further, seeing what the potential impact could be. You know, there's a big difference between a version of cross-site scripting that presents a low risk to the business and a more developed version of that finding that almost could present a higher, even a critical vulnerability to that business. So, like, you know, that grey area in between, I think, is immensely impactful, because if you are running a scanner and it finds that vulnerability and you go, great, I now know about it, well, do you? Because if the detection method really says that that scanner is kind of maybe 40 to 60% reliable, I would suggest that all you've really done is discovered that you need to do some more testing, as opposed to you found it and you can now move into remediation. Right, so in light of this, and in light of this new, improved Let's Talk Security Testing podcast, if our audience hasn't noticed, we're jazzing things up a little bit. We've got a game to play. Shock. The game is called Hack It or Track It. hack it, or track it.
Am I supposed to be saying something here?
I was expecting a bit more there, but he isn't prepared. This is kind of a theme that you'll notice. Hack it or track it. So the purpose of this is I'm going to throw some vulnerabilities at you. Not literally, although that would be funny if they were like foam shapes. And I want you to first tell me how you would hack it, i.e. how you would exploit it in your nefarious brain. And then how you would track it. And what we mean by track it is, it just rhymes with hack it, but what we mean by track it is how you would go about locating it in terms of a detection method, and the sort of supplementary information that comes with that. So, should we kick off? By the way, Tom's got no prior knowledge of what these might be, nor have I. So this could get quite interesting.
Or chaotic.
So, yeah. So let's just throw it in there with SQL injection.
Okay. Yeah. SQL injection. I mean, you know, hacking it is about finding places where you can input information that will be passed through into a SQL statement, and the result of that is you're starting to manipulate database queries. So first stage, you find any place that you can input into an application, right? Form fields, URL parameters, post data, even cookies, anything that you are then sending to the application that's likely to be included in a database query. You stick an apostrophe in there, you stick a couple of dashes in there, you stick a whole range of different common SQL statements in there to see what happens. In an ideal situation, you find that the application comes back with some SQL errors that then tell you actually you're breaking a statement. But failing that, you might find differences in the response size, you might find differences in the time that the response takes. Anything that indicates that maybe you're breaking the logic of the application. So that's hacking it. And the end goal is either access data in the database or modify the data.
Brilliant. Tracking it.
Tracking it. Well, so the challenge of SQL injection is the challenge in finding SQL injection dynamically is exactly what I described, that sometimes you get information back, sometimes you don't get information back. So I'd generally steer clear of relying on things like DAST to be able to find it. I find that SAST is actually pretty good these days at being able to find a lot of SQL injection vulnerabilities. So looking in your code base to be able to find instances where you are inputting user-supplied data directly into SQL queries is usually a pretty good giveaway. Not necessarily that SQL injection is there, but that SQL injection might be there. And then you feed that into a manual validation process to be able to say yes or no, trace this data back to its source and go from there.
Awesome. Love it. Love it. Okay. Should we do another one? That's quite fun. DOM-based cross-site scripting.
DOM-based cross-site scripting, yeah. So for people who are familiar with typical cross-site scripting but not familiar with DOM-based, it's slightly more challenging in most situations, because while typical cross-site scripting, you're trying to get the application to return back to you a code snippet that you've input into a request. With DOM-XSS, what you're trying to do is make the JavaScript within the page include some content that often never even makes it to the server. So you input something into a form field that's not actually sent in like a post request, but is instead just simply taken by the JavaScript and placed somewhere else within the document. So auditing those JavaScript files, finding out what they're actually doing with the data is probably a good place to start. And again, SAST is pretty good at being able to find a lot of common DOM-XSS vulnerabilities. You know, there are functions that we know are fairly unsafe to use these days. And DAST, more modern DAST, sort of IAST, is actually a pretty good supplement to that. So being able to fuzz all of the different fields and being able to observe when JavaScript is actually being executed, particularly JavaScript that has the payloads included within those kinds of tools. You know, it's a hybrid model, but I'd say SAST and DAST are probably a good place to start.
Awesome. All right, let's just do one more. Try and throw in a little bit of a curveball. Business logic flaws.
Okay, yeah. So business logic flaws, SAST and DAST are out straight away.
No, we've got to hack it first.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, hack it
first. Jumping the gun there.
Hack it first. Well, yeah, this is a tricky one because there's so many different types of business logic flaws. A logic flaw is just making an application do something that the business wouldn't want it to do. So, I mean, a classic example is in a payment flow, being able to bypass the payment process by maybe getting to the page where you're supposed to perform the payment and then just, I don't know, setting a value to true that should have been false and making it think that you've therefore completed the payment. You know, it doesn't validate that payment was successful. Something of that nature is a business logic flaw. So, I mean, I guess that's what I'm going to go with, but there's thousands. Business logic flaws, it's a bit of a catch-all description for vulnerabilities that often don't fit into other classes.
Nice. So if we're talking about business logic flaw in a payment gateway, your way you're hacking it is just basically just attempting to bypass the payment gateway.
Tamper with the response that the payment gateway provides to make it look like your transaction was successful when it wasn't is a classic example.
Awesome. Are you tracking it?
Well, yeah, there's two, again, two detection methods that I would say are strong in this regard. The first one's penetration testing, a manual tester actually coming in and validating that process, really understanding what it's supposed to do, really understanding how it is operating, and then trying to find means and ways of being able to make it do something other than that. And the second one's just in design principles, in really sitting down conceptually and security architecting or setting out the security requirements when you're actually building it to begin with. This is shifting as far left as you possibly can inside the SDLC and saying, you know, is this functionality that requires any real logic? And if it is, what logic could it could be introduced here? And, you know, you can do things, you can even push this on to developers to do things like build unit tests around that or defensively program where you define all of the conditions that you don't want to see before you ever even define what the program's supposed to do in the situation you do want to see. And I think, you know, technically not a detection method in the sense that you're not finding the vulnerability so much as you are preventing them before they ever exist, but it's certainly an opportunity to be able to mitigate business logic flaws and manage their existence within your systems.
Brilliant. Well, I think that's enough quizzing Tom for the day. Talk to me about this sort of, you know, we talk about it internally, don't we? Like black, white and grey in terms of the what definitively can be found using automation, what definitively can be found manually, and then where there's this grey area in between. Can you shed any light on what, you know, what that means practically?
Sure. So that's actually interesting. After this conversation, I've got a meeting with students at Lancaster University who are doing some research in this specific area, and I'm collaborating with them on being able to understand what I really wanted and what they're working on is an understanding of the efficacy of different detection methods for different types of vulnerabilities. But the first question the lecturer has come back with, and the reason why we've got this meeting, is define efficacy. Does efficacy mean whether it finds it 100%, whether it finds the class of vulnerability 100% of the time? Does it mean whether it finds it without false positives? You know, there's so many factors that go into whether or not you consider a tool or even a person to be able to operate effectively before you then even delve into how the sort of levels of effectiveness that they can do. You know, it's not just a binary, it can find it, it can't find it, but then it can find it and it can provide you this additional information, this additional recommendation, even these remediation steps. So,
and just because it's possible for static analysis to find a vulnerability doesn't mean your SAST tool will. Mm-hmm. Just because it's possible for a human pen tester to find something doesn't mean your human pen tester will. So I guess there's elements where this research is really going to help, but there's still going to be an element of going, okay, just that, you know, I know that this technology can find this thing, and that's the first step, but does my version of this technology, does my person, whatever it is, also have the capability that matches the possible?
And not just does my version of this SAS tool or this DAS tool have the capability to find cross-site scripting, but does it have the capability to find cross-site scripting in my PHP application or my ASP application or my version of cross-site scripting? Can it find reflected? Can it find stored? Can it find DOM-based? Can it find it in an authenticated sense? Can it find it in a get parameter, a post parameter? You know, there are so many nuances. And
living in the world of perfect configuration as well.
Yeah, there's so many nuances, so many subtle differences in the different instances of a vulnerability that to an extent everything is great, but it's a spectrum, right? You know, a tool can 99% of the time tell you with confidence that there is or there isn't a TLS cipher vulnerability because there are set ciphers that are either enabled or they're not enabled. But it can find almost no instances of business logic flaws because a tool does not fundamentally understand what is a flaw to the business, because a business logic flaw for one business might actually be an intended functionality for another business. And then things that sit in the middle are things like cross-site scripting, where you can find them under certain conditions, typically sort of ideal conditions. You are reflecting exactly what is in the input, but it might struggle to find it under different conditions where the input on one page, for example, is output on another page, potentially on an entirely different application that might not even be in scope of that scanner.
Look, perfect worlds aside, in the absence of Citix's, you know, amazing research in partnership with Lancaster University, what are people supposed to do? Like, you know, people listening today might be thinking, I didn't know that. I'll go take a look on MITRE's list and also find the same answers that we found. What can they do? I mean, what, just try and understand your products better? Like, actually do the security thinking yourself in terms of what the capabilities are, try and deduce from that what they might not and might be able to find? What should people do?
Well, for years, people have tried to address this problem by layering their security testing tooling. You know, you don't have SAST or DAST or pen testing or bug bounties. You have all four in some description, and you hope that by having those layers, what falls through one net won't fall through another net. I'm not a big fan of taking that approach. I think it's kind of blindly trusting, or it's... it doesn't seem the most efficient way to go about it, but it's certainly
expensive as well.
It is expensive, yeah. There's no science to be able to say that actually, just because I've got four things instead of three, I'm going to find 25% more things, right?
And this is all about continuously catching stuff. If you do your pen test at the end of the year on that day, if someone's spent £500,000 on pen testing and you've just paid for an annual pen test, the day after your pen test, you stand there with a very similar amount of knowledge to the other guy. You know, you won't tomorrow, but you do on that day. So this is the trade-off and the value that you get from this increase in spend and buying these additional tools.
So I think the best thing to do is to look to the tools. Typically, the further right you go in the SDL or in the security testing landscape, you know, when you start getting into baseline pen tests, RASP, things like that, you can fairly reliably and confidently pick up on the vulnerabilities in the vast majority of cases, and even bug bounties to some extent. And I think they're a good measure of how things earlier in the cycle are performing. If the pen test is the first time you're being told about SQL injection, then perhaps you need to look at whether your SAS tool is performing well. And in fact, once you start to find your SAS tool is performing well, potentially you can remove the need to even look for those kinds of vulnerabilities in that pen test, and that's where you start getting into the realm of being able to really refine and tune and build the engine behind your security testing program. But it is very, very specific to your technology stack, to the way you develop, to your requirements and to your security testing tooling, and how much tuning you want to do it inside your business.
Yeah, awesome. Well, that's been good today. Thank you for listening. I hope that was useful. We're not always here to provide the answers, but we can certainly join you in looking and shining a light on the problem. Let me know if you like the new format. We're interested. Feel free to reach out. But if not, then see us again here in a couple of weeks, where we'll have more content for you. Bye now.